If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the One Supreme Presence. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Finding Your Natural Way to Flow with Spirit, while recognizing what gives rise to joy and freedom. So if you're ready, ask for the clearance for yourself. Take a deep breath and call yourself forward into the most divine, exquisite integration that you can possibly reach into and incorporate. That part of you that is vast, birthless, deathless, eternal, ever whole, ever pure, all-knowing, all-powerful, everywhere present. Why? Because you are an extension of divine love into time and space. And what is true of the Supreme Divine Creator is true of you. So take another deep breath and allow those facts to sink in to your consciousness, displacing all of the false identifications that have been gathered through countless immersions in Maya and the illusion of time and space and becomingness. And notice with that integration how the body reacts. The electromagnetic field of the physical biosphere always reacts to the inflow of spirit. Take another deep breath and be aware that energy centers and integrates. It's something that you, by your intention and your conscious breath, can always access. When you need empowerment, clarity, to clear the sediments of your passage through time and space and events, you can always clear that with your breath and your intention. We're entering a time on the planet, obviously, where everything that can be shaken, that's not firmly rooted in reality, is being shaken loose. It's collapsing. We're entering the seventh golden age, and this one is the Satya Yuga, the age of truth. That's why there's all of this craziness surfacing. You can so clearly see the lie as it presents, because it's extremely upsetting to the truth that resides in each one of us. There's an automatic rejection of lies, of things that are not aligned with truth. And everyone knows it. It can be seen so clearly. Oh, sure, people become in their minds and their egos and their personalities entrained in strong rhetoric. but left to their own devices, if they're not just simply following, if they think at all seriously and come into attunement with their own sense of truth, it's very clear to see. And so all of these things are being swept to the surface that have been there all along. It's just now with international internet coverage, television, all the things we have access to through the media, everything is known almost instantly across the whole planet. So truly, we are one family of humanity, one race of humanity. And we're all learning how to communicate the one language of the heart, and we must. Only those who know that language will be able to enter into a dialogue and relationship with the incoming energies. All of these solar flares, all of these cosmic events, what are they for? They're to bring in a surcharging of cosmic divine energy. That is part of the transformation of this planet into an entirely new era. The great avatar Sai Baba has said that the very atmosphere itself will change. They talk about global warming and the rising of the sea levels and the severity of the storms and global pollution and all of that. And we all have our different interpretations and ways of pointing fingers of blame. But the truth is, we've lost connection with ourselves and consequently the planet, which is also part of ourselves. And the elements of nature, there's an alienation in our connectedness, because we're not speaking the language of the heart, but the language of the mind and the indoctrinated thoughts that have been instilled and ingrained life after life. So the whole mind, the whole attitude and approach to life has to be cleared. And sometimes the best way to shake a person out of the lethargy of the commonplace social patterning and conditioning is through an abrupt pattern change, which these storms and earthquakes and tornadoes and floods, they disrupt our lives, they disrupt the unknown, they disrupt everything. But the good news is they also offer an opportunity to be free of all of that, and to kind of get a little breather where you can see where you'd really like to place your life. Reinvent yourself. Take a new approach. Sometimes when you lose everything, oddly enough, what you actually feel is relief. And then you realize, perhaps for the first time, how little of that stuff really mattered, how little of it really gave you anything of lasting value. If it could be taken away so quickly, could it be based on anything of enduring truth? No, of course not. So now we are moving into a time when we absolutely must find our own way, our own center, without the outer accoutrements of the normal things that we have used, perhaps, to create those states of peace and calmness and stillness. Maybe we won't have opportunity or availability to do our pujas and our meditations and our rituals. Maybe that will be interrupted. Who knows? We don't know what the future will bring. But we do know who holds the future, and we know who guides and guards all things. And we are known as the people of God by the love and the faith and the knowing and the certainty that resides in our hearts regarding that. We call it different names. We have different ways of relating to that one divine core essence, but it's one and the same, regardless of the cultural valence. And it's upon that solid rock that we must stand, because truly everything else is sinking sand. So do what you can do according to your guidance to be centered in that which cannot be shaken. Don't build your life around that which can be swept away in an instant, including your physical body. Use these opportunities of these weekly transmissions that give you keys to move above identifying with the things that change. The body, the world, outer relationships, everything that we depend on, that form is going to shift and change and at some point depart our lives. We must be centered on that which changes not. It's important to arm ourselves with a deeper understanding of the essential truth that the Avatar Sai Baba has been teaching us for many decades. The one changeless creator creates all of these innumerable objects in creation that are subject to change in terms of their names and their forms. Yet the truth is, everything comes from God. Everything is God. And everything returns to God. God is in everything, and everything is God. How is that? You've got to understand that God is formless light. And when you raise anything to its ultimate high vibration, it becomes light. And beyond light, it becomes the living word, the Om, or the hue. And there's many variations of that. So for each one of us, that one divine spirit has designed the most perfect way to awaken and to remember our divine wholeness. And it's simply a remembering. A rejoining with that which has always been present. So self-awareness is absolutely essential because without it, there is neither freedom nor joy, nor can there be, because that's the source of freedom and joy. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom and joy. Now, in Sanskrit, that's called Sahaja Santosham, which means natural fullness of joy, natural contentment without any reason. If there's no reason, there's no season. In other words, if there's no reason, it's part of that eternal flow of spirit that is in existence beyond the world of forms and names and limitations. So everything in life depends upon our developing self-awareness, awareness of who and what we are apart from our present personality, present circumstances, our role in life and our physical forms. To become self-aware, one must develop a balcony position from which one observes one's personal performance upon the stage of life. You observe it. That's called operating from higher spiritual awareness. That's also been described as mindfulness, the objective observer, soul transcendence and soul awareness, or atmic awareness. But we may not have time for any of these things. They have to become so automatic that they're our default go-to instantly when anything arises. Any tragedy, any sudden pattern interrupt, we have to ingrain it and use this time, this envelope, this small little packet of time that we still have, because it looks like we need to fasten our seatbelts, because the next few months and couple years may really take us beyond where we are now in very shocking ways. So it's a matter of cultivating the position of the impersonal self. The ego self, you see, imagines itself as the center of its little universe, its little fiefdom. And it takes the form of the lower mind, the critical mind, the judgmental mind, the separative mind. And it cares only about what will benefit its own little personal needs and demands. The ego is 100% selfish. There's not an iota of goodness in it. It is totally self-seeking. And its whole agenda is about finding what's in it for me. And it's this selfishness that is keeping each one of us imprisoned in unhappy states. Any unhappy state of lack and longing and endless frustration can be attributed to that selfishness, because one's needs are not going to be met out of that state. They can't be met. They're totally out of sync with reality, with life itself. The whole of the circle of life is interdependent as one fabric. It's dependent on each of the threads that form that fabric. In fact, the universe itself will run away from such a person who's like a black hole, contributing nothing but sucking energy and giving nothing in return but more demands. Identify that part of the nature, because we all have it lurking somewhere. It changes all sorts of little, you know, it's a shapeshifter. It keeps shifting. But you can know that it's an operation because it's very, very unhappy. It's very discontented. It's not flowing. It's resisting. It's fighting. It's arguing. It's demanding that things change to accommodate its preference. So what we need to find is the way that is most natural according to our inherent nature and our present state of consciousness. And that way, with a capital W, grows and expands as each individual unfolds into deeper states of awareness. And because one's way is never in conflict with one's inherent nature, it never gives rise to stress. Watch when you feel stress. Almost always it's because you're stepped out of your natural flow and are trying to accommodate unnatural needs, unnatural demands. Because anything that God would have you do, God equips you to do, empowers you to do, and bridges all of your personal inadequacies to fulfill imperfection according to its standards, not yours. We probably wouldn't know a perfect act if it kissed us on the forehead. So we're not in a position to judge. But we can put ourselves in a position where spirit has ready access to operate through us at all times. And that means to dislodge the ego from its little fiefdom within your mind. So because one's way is never in conflict with one's inherent nature, it never gives rise to that sense of inner conflict and stress and a heavy feeling that comes on you when you're trying to live a false life. So flowing with events in life from that place of most natural response, observe it. It gives rise to a sense of inner release and expansiveness. Take a deep breath. And just open your arms really wide and let your chest rise up. And just say yes, yes, yes to life. To life more abundant, to life in greater freedom, life of greater and ever-expanding awareness. So there's freedom when one is flowing with divine spirit. It's as if one were born aloft, like a feather upon the divine breath. Then visualize yourself as a feather being borne aloft on the breath of God. Ooh, doesn't that feel good? So there's always joy in the presence of spiritual freedom. Joy and expansiveness. You know, every time you feel confined, you're stuck in your mind. You're stuck in the known and the conditioning. And those inner voices that negate joy and wholeness and freedom and expansive ability, unlimited potential. Now, we often say, stalk your happiness like a puma stalking prey. Stalk your happiness like a puma stalking prey. What that means is to study and observe the flows of your response to life situations, to your moods, feelings, and thought patterns. Study yourself from above yourself, above the lower mind with its constant chatter and critiquing. Go to that silent, objective observer. And from witnessing awareness, notice what gives rise to the slightest whiff of happiness. Sai Baba has defined happiness as union with God. Of course, he's using probably the word santosham, which is a much deeper, has a much deeper connotation than the English word happiness, which can be very fleeting and very superficial. We're talking about that which does not get deflated or defeated or brought down by anything that happens in the world. You can be going through the most abysmal loss, which I have, and actually still feel that incredible joy. Doesn't sound possible, but it does. Once you get that sahaja going, that sahaja, that natural santosham, that natural joy, no matter what happens to you, like the depth of the ocean, it's all surface on the surface, but in the depth, deep, deep down inside yourself, that joy, that peace, that certainty, that solid rock never changes. So study yourself from above yourself. And right now, just go about, 5, 6, 7, 8 feet above your physical body where you're sitting. And look down on yourself. See the top of your head? to your physical form. Just observe yourself. Now, bless yourself. Put your hands over your head in your imagination as you stand above your physical body. And bless you. Bless your life. Bless your station in life, your level of consciousness. Bless everything about you. And tell yourself, regardless of how you appear, how you express, and what's going on with you, I unconditionally love and accept you. And you give yourself your own blessing. Bless everything in your life. It's absolutely miraculous. What happens when you live to bless? Bless your wallet. Bless your money. Bless your bills and your ability to pay those bills. Bless your social security checks, whatever. Bless your food. Bless your water. Bless your home. Bless your loved ones, your friends, your children. Bless the world. Bless the candidates that are vying for presidency. Yeah, you get karma if you start bad-mouthing them. Who are you to judge them? You don't know who they are, really. You don't really know. Only God knows the karma and the situation as it is. But one thing that is very positive that's happening is that they are showing forth levels of consciousness that represent paradigms. So it's a paradigm shift we're looking at here, not personalities. So learn to look beyond the form, beyond the rhetoric, and realize within every single being, no matter how atrocious or obnoxious the outer presentation, dwells the self-same spirit, which is in fact one with yourself. You only see yourself. You only listen to yourself. Everything that you see is a form of your own self. You want to take it up to the highest? They're all your own incarnations as the Supreme Atma. So Sai Baba has defined happiness as union with God. So that would imply that every whiff of happiness indicates you're on the right track. Happiness for no reason, but you know, you are flowing with divine spirit in the way designed for you. Sai Baba is constantly saying, be happy, be happy. Don't worry. Why fear when I am here? You might say, well, he's not here anymore. He passed away. No. The form disappeared from the outer. Sai Baba, Jesus Christ, all of the masters, the Lord Buddha, they're all here now, present. We just thought we had them nailed down in that little form. Oh, no. They went from now here to everywhere. Well, they were everywhere before, but we were limited to thinking, oh no, they're in India, they're here, they're there. No. These great Satpurushas are omnipresent. Omnipresent. And Jesus, the Christ, living physically, in his immortalized, ascended body, the Master Jesus, who embodied the Christ back in Nazareth, is in a new body, immortalized, and I visit him regularly. That sounds shocking. Well, it's a fact. All I can say. So he's here, physically, also, omnipresent. And you are too. Do you think you're limited to this enchilada that you're looking down upon at sitting and listening? No. You are also omnipresent. It's just that they know that. They've realized it. They've remembered it for themselves. They've actualized it for themselves. And you, perhaps, are still in that process of sorting yourself out and remembering. So happiness for no reason lets you know you're flowing with divine spirit in the way designed for you. You know, we don't pay enough attention to those moments when we're just perfectly happy for no reason. We usually think things have to change or be different to be happy. But that's what Sai Baba would call ice cream happiness. It's not lasting happiness. You're happy because you got married, you're in love, you have a new car, a new house, a new whatever. That's not happiness. That's desire fulfillment for a moment or two. But how long does that happiness last? Not all that long. Months, maybe a few years. And then you find reason to criticize and find fault with it. Divorce it or whatever. Replace it. That's not happiness. Now, when you're in that state of sahaja santosham, or self-realized inner wholeness and attunement, life still does what it does. The world is like an ego on steroids. It's our collective craziness. It's our projection of all of our wackiness that's been lodged in our collective pain body, our collective subconscious. And it acts out through those of us that are not aligned with spirit, that are operating out of that ego, out of that totally insane part of the mind. And it looks insane because it is insane. And everything that comes out of that is insane. So what can you do about it? Well, Jesus in A Course in Miracles said that you can never heal anyone by seeing the insanity, but only by looking through to that perfectly innocent child of God, that perfect soul. Oh boy, is that hard sometimes. Oh my gosh. He didn't say it would be easy, but it's what you need to do. So we have to perceive the sanity in the midst of the insanity and know that the insanity is false and the sanity is reality. So once you've made that shift into that higher state of self-awareness, life still does what it does. And life in the physical dimension is always full of challenges, the ups and downs. Sai Baba said that pleasure is an interval between two sufferings. So, you know, that's just the way things are. In the lower levels of the material universes beneath the soul and God realms. These are the realms for testing of consciousness, biological and psychic and mental and emotional testing arenas. So ups and downs are what happen here. And it's part of the curriculum for this earth school of duality. But you can learn to be living just above the karma dramas, and you will be witnessing and responding rather than reacting and getting sucked into the outer dramatics. In fact, practice. For example, if you are still watching the political debacle. Practice just watching it without getting sucked in emotionally, without getting angry, without getting outraged, without getting sucked into it. See if you can be the objective observer, look to see what is, but stay out of it. Don't link into that karmic flow, that energy. Don't affinitize with that rhetoric. Just observe it from that quiet, centered place. That way you can help dispel some of the maya. You can be a conduit for grace to enter the arena of consciousness and help to lift some of that. The minute you buy in and suck into the outer, you've lost your power. You've lost your effectiveness as an instrument. You're in ego mode. What do egos do? They notice other egos. They love to find the little chink in the armor of other people. Oh, she did that. He did that. Oh, look what he did. Look what she did. But every finger that points at another, there is three more that are accusing the one that's pointing. Three more fingers are pointing to you. So leave the judgment out of the equation and see if you can exercise that higher awareness. Practice every day. Train your lower vehicles to stay out of irritation and reaction. Train them like you train a dog. When things happen, don't be quick to be angry and curse and swear and carry on like a moron. Have the self-directive control of your vehicles to monitor their behavior, to keep them in line with being in a centered place. The soul, you see, is a very neutral entity. Very neutral. It just thinks everything is fine the way it is because it understands that everything is self-elected and unfolding as per every single person's choice. Everybody that goes through the earthquake has signed on for that. You think, oh my God, who in the world would sign on for such a thing? Or cancer, or some horrible disease. Who says it's horrible? Well, we do down here, don't we? Because we're identified with a body. Oh my God, all those people, how they're suffering. Well, don't you think it'd be a good idea to use this opportunity to know how to get out of your body? Because what really happens when you have a little bit of development is that you're out of your body and home with God before the earthquake even hits. Who's going to be foolish enough to stay in their body when they can see from a higher level that there's going to be an earthquake? So who's down there suffering? Usually a body elemental, the basic self, which hasn't been taught perhaps to release. So I say you have to train your lower levels, including your basic self, like you're training a young child, like you're training a dog. Not that the two are related, but in some ways they are. The basic self is a very elemental, immature consciousness unit that through experiencing life as your little helper will be able eventually to evolve to being a conscious personality and eventually a soul. So everything is growing and taking their next level of unfoldment through interacting with you. But no one really is in their body when they die. It's been proven again and again by people who've had near-death experiences. And rise above them. You know, they're able to see what's happening to the body and they're out of it above the body. It's maybe helpful to know that children who are raped and abused very often usually have no recall of that. Why? Because they leave their bodies. Their young children leave their bodies. They're with God immediately. So learn how to rise above physical identification. Know that you're more than your body. Bodies are going to fall away at some point. That's what bodies do down here. But that really has no effect on you. You go on to whatever's next. So life will be what it is. It's going to do what it's going to do because that's the way it's been set up down here as a testing training ground for consciousness. But you'll learn to live above that and to respond appropriately as spiritually directed rather than getting sucked into the fray. So everything that's unfolding just as it's meant to awaken your human personality to its highest divine good and manifestation. So as soul, you have signed on for your particular role enactment in this play of consciousness. Your experiences were pre-selected by you to reveal to yourself what you most wish to examine, learn, and transcend in this lifetime. This lifetime is like a sentence. Passing out of it is like the period at the end of a sentence, to quote Amaji. But your book of life, your Shariat Kisugmad, your way of the eternal, is being written every day and added to, and it's endless. So the whole purpose of life is to awaken to your divinity, to remember that you are one with God forever and ever, and that in fact you are God. To do that, one must discover how to recognize and maintain that divinity in daily life. To notice those things that give rise to happiness and peace and sense of expansiveness and freedom. These are the natural expressions of your divine nature. It's natural to you to be happy, like a child. We always ask when we see a child cry, what's the matter? In fact, we ask when somebody else is crying too, whatever age they are, what's the matter? See, we all know that happiness is our natural state. So here we are actively practicing awareness of the beloved as an inner presence that we keep romancing as we walk through our daily life. We keep romancing the beloved. And it is a romance. It's thrilling. When you sense that beloved right below your chin, right in the center of your heart, oh, you're filled. You're filled to overflowing with a sense of such love. The one divine beloved lives in you and expresses through you, through your human personality. So Sai Baba has said, speaking as a divine avatar, that he has assigned to each of us our role in his cosmic drama, the lines we are to deliver, the character, and even our faults and shortcomings. Wow! Isn't that an interesting thought? The ego mind, which is always trying to blame you, cannot even hold fault up in order to condemn us to guilt and illusion. You know, whenever you feel guilty, that's the ego mind pushing you into that illusion. Because you see, our faults are divinely allotted as well. Sai Baba has said that he gives us certain faults and shortcomings so that we won't develop a big head And also, so we'll have something to work on in our spare time. And that's a direct quote, which I found extremely amusing and relieving. As Sai Baba told one devotee, your thoughts are not even your thoughts. They are my thoughts. Your life is not even your life. It is my life being lived through you and as you. So think about it. Your thoughts are not even your thoughts. They are God's thoughts. Your life is not even your life. It is God's life being lived through you as you. Well, that thought, contemplated and accepted as fact, will immediately radically shift our consciousness into higher gear. These are the sort of things we need to ponder instead of thinking about nonsense things. The thing is, in identifying with our body and our personality with all of its flaws, we keep ourselves confined in ignorance and suffering. We keep ourselves in that place. Baba says that if you keep saying you're human, you're only human, you'll remain human. But he says instead of saying that, we mustn't identify with being human. We must say, I am divine, I am God, I am indistinguishable from God. God's nature is my nature. I am ever whole, I am ever free. I remain in God, as God, forever one with God. So not a single false assumption has ever given rise to a single whiff of happiness. Notice that. Not a single false assumption gives rise to a single whiff of happiness, peace, expansiveness, or freedom. There's not an iota of happiness in accepting falsehood as reality. That should be a dead giveaway if you're unhappy that you're looking at something, to quote Jesus from the Course of Miracles. Whenever you're not happy, you're looking at something that's not there. Well, it looks like it's there, but you have to look beyond the maya, the illusion of appearance, to reality. You have to constantly be looking through your inner vision rather than the evidence of the body's eyes. So also notice what causes your spirit, your energy, your joy and peace to depart. Notice whenever you are sad, depressed, or in any negative state, that you bought into something that is not true, and thus not real. Notice whenever you're in conflict with yourself, or whatever is going on, or trying to change what is, or fix, or get rid of it. Notice how that makes you feel. It certainly doesn't feel joyful, peaceful, expansive, or free, does it? So the first step on the way to unconditional love is to unconditionally love and accept oneself. Yeah, warts and all. When all your attention is focused upon your physical body and human personality, trying to perfect that passing fancy, there's no room for you as the divine self to express. That's what it means to get out of your way, get out of your own way. So since nothing can ever be perfect in the material dimension, the ego mind is setting you up for continual failure, frustration, and self-condemnation. You know, bust its game. What a waste of time and energy. Now, what is absolutely perfect is who you really are, your true identity as the beloved, as the divine soul. Whatever you do, if it's done with unconditional loving, is made perfect. You have come from perfect love, you are made of perfect love, and your function within the human form is only to communicate that divine love. God is love. So the more you move into and integrate your true divine nature as love, the more your divinity is expressing its godhood. That's what it means to become one with God or to realize God is that everything falls away but your divine nature, which is pure love. Now, to activate that dormant, loving, divine nature, one must turn one's attention from one's human egoic concerns and needs and give to others. Notice whenever you do something to assist another, how good that feels. It's an instant boost into a more positive state of consciousness. Serving and happiness go together just as selfishness and sorrow are companions. Jesus, in A Course in Miracles, has described the purpose of relationships is happiness. So, another thing is to notice whenever you are unhappy in a relationship, notice if you look invariably, you're going to find selfishness has crept into that relationship. First of all, notice if you're exerting psychological pressure on your loved one or another. It's very subtle. It's when that ego has an agenda and it's pushing. And everybody can feel it. It feels awful when you're in the presence of a person that's psychologically exerting pressure on you. So notice if you're doing that because you're inflicting suffering upon another when you do that. How? By your personal demands and expectations, your internal critiquing, your negative thoughts and judgments. People feel that. They sense it. So are you attempting to change or fix them? Are you resisting what's going on and not cooperating with the natural flow of spirit in the way that's being indicated? Now, we are speaking of the usual relationship one forms, which are nearly always formed to work out unfinished business from previous lifetimes. They're usually karmically based. Later on, when you're more self-realized, it began to attract dharmic relationships for the divine work of God. That's a different type of a union. But the average relationship has karma inherent in it, which means there's work to be done by each of those individuals and together as a unit. However, if you're in a violent, abusive relationship, your duty is to get out of it by any available means as soon as possible. Because your first duty is to protect your physical life by taking care of yourself so that you can be in a position to take care of others. So you can't fix someone who is psychotic. You have to get out of that arena entirely. If a loved one is entrapped in substance addiction, your duty is to do all you possibly can to help them get the professional help they need to recover their own self-determination. This is a pattern that requires professional intervention. But in general, when you do something to give energy rather than to take energy from another, you'll experience happiness and mutual empowerment and freedom. Notice when you go to a gathering, for example, or meet up with another. What is your motive? Are you going to get something? Is your intention to gain something for yourself from that person? Beware. You're in ego, getting, and using mode. Are you seeking to get energy in some form for yourself? Be very, very observant of your motive when you go out the door to meet with someone. Because if you're doing that, you're loaded with agenda, which people can sense right away. You're operating out of lack and neediness mode. And boy, you push people away when you do that. Instead, notice as you sit across from another person, if you're giving them energy, Are you giving energy to that person? When each is conscious enough to mutually do this at the same time, there's equality, partnership, and mutual happiness. There's no pressure. You're both centered and you're both giving. The motive is to extend. Atonement, as Jesus would call it in A Course in Miracles, extend atonement or atonement. How do you give energy? You give it by being fully present with them. Totally. No cell phone interruptions, no texting. 100% you are focused on them. You give energy by listening completely to what they're saying with eye contact and full attention. You don't interrupt them. You do not contradict them. You don't wait until they shut up so that you can one-up them and tell your story or how you did the same thing and even better. You don't do any of that. You listen and offer opinion only if asked. Most people, if you notice, want to express their thoughts with someone who will give them the freedom and space to do that. Not all want feedback, and few, if any, want to be fixed, but people all want to be heard. So when you give attention to anyone or anything, you are giving them energy. Now, you discern those things in relationships where you are being guided by divine spirit to lend your energy and use wisdom and discernment in all things. Pay attention so that you stay in the flow of spirit, and you will find that you're in that place of ongoing, natural, inner ease, inner peace, and happiness. So I hope this has been helpful to you. And there are many keys in that seminar we just transmitted. And if you contemplate them, you'll find that you're practicing meditation and prayer and yoga all the time without the outer accoutrements. You're just living as an integrated and whole person. So let's take a deep breath and go out chanting on I, you. Deep breath. On I, you. Blessings and grace, and may all the beings of all the worlds and this beautiful planet have peace, awaken to their divinity, and have happiness. Namaste.